Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of political shenanigans with us here on the Sunday Times Politics Desk. This is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly Podcast with me, Amil Amrao. Thank you all for listening in. By now, you know what this podcast is all about. We have a little bit of fun in studio analyzing the big political stories for the week without boring you to death with all the jargon that you hate so much. We'll give you everything you need to know to sustain a debate around the water cooler, but not enough to make you an expert, because then we'll be out of jobs.
Yeah.
This
yeah,
week,
man.
What's hey, going
this
on?
Now, this week, I'm joined in studio by my colleagues Zimasa Matiwane, Apiwe de Klerk, and Zingisa Mvumvu. We're going to be talking about Zimasa's big expose in the Sunday Times front page this week about a KZN MEC who is spending thousands each month to rent a car because he refuses to use the one he was given. We'll also be looking at the lead-up to the DA's Federal Council meeting this weekend. So guys, let's get straight into it. Zimasa, let's start off with your story. Now, you write that the education MEC in KZN, Kwazi Mshengu, Zingisa, any relation?
Yeah, no, he's my brother.
Wow, he doesn't even know you.
You must tell your brother to pay back the money.
Now, apparently...
We want our money.
Apparently, Mr. Mshengu has been caught using an elaborate scam to justify his not using the state car used by his predecessor, instead blowing hundreds of thousands of rands in taxpayers' money on car hire. Something like 90,000 rand a month, isn't it?
That's what he said.
So tell us a little bit about the story. What does it entail?
Basically, I think it's just egos.
Yeah.
Because the previous MEC is his political rival. The guys don't get along.
Who's the previous MEC?
Thandeni Dlungwane. So the previous MEC had a car.
A nice car, I imagine.
A very nice car.
A Mercedes-Benz that the department bought for him a year before Mshengu came in. Mm. So when Mshengu came in, the car is at 40,000 kilometers. Ne?
Yo, that's still brand new.
It's still brand new. And, you know, even the ministerial handbook states that until it gets to 120,000 kilometers or you've been using it for 5 years, then you can change it. So this is basically still brand new. But the guy refuses to use the car. And in his refusal to use the car, he decides not to auction the car and perhaps maybe get another car. So he is struggling because how is he going to justify buying a car when the car exists? Mm. So he decides that, okay, you know what? I will just hire another car using taxpayers' money, which he now claims is 90,000 per month. When we asked them, they didn't know. Anyway, that's a story for another day. But then the way that they went about it, trying to conceal this whole information.
Yeah, tell me about this forged letter. That seems pretty interesting.
How did you get this forged letter?
Hey, stop trying to reveal the master sources here.
We have Mercedes on record. In the story, saying they have never seen the letter. The letter did not come from them. They have never written the letter.
What is this letter? What does the letter
say? Basically, it looks like a diagnostic report on the car that is supposedly faulty. Mm. I don't know much about cars, but it looks very dodgy. We obviously did our due diligence and tried to verify the authenticity of the letter. And, you know, as we suspected, it turned out that the letter was forged. So that's where we're at. But, I mean, the MEC is convinced that there's a conspiracy against him. So, yeah, there's that too.
So the two things that I picked up from the story, that the serious things about the car that could make it not move forward.
Yeah.
Is that the battery is a problem.
Yeah.
And that it once had a burst tire. Those two things. Yeah. And then your source from the dealership says, but there's nothing wrong with the car.
Remember, the car has not been used since this guy took office, which was around 2017.
So obviously the battery
just needed to jumpstart the car.
Of course, if you're not using it for this long, there's going to be a problem with the battery.
Of course.
And
it just needed to buy jambas. And then he decided to go and hire a car for like 90,000.
He didn't even have to hire a car.
The story says that Mshengu is being driven around by a Mercedes-Benz GLE. And that's those really nice SUVs hired from Woodford Car Hire. Now, according to the company website, the car costs 103,000 rand a month. This means that the government has spent at least R500,000 since Mshengu took office in May. Which is not even 6 months ago, guys.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. R500,000 is a whole nother Mercedes.
I mean, this is shocking, to say the least, that a public official would behave.
Is it shocking, really? In this.
Well, it's not shocking because we are sort of accustomed to these things. But, I mean, really, he's one of the young generations. This guy is still under 35. He's still a member of the youth group or somewhere around there. You know, this generation, we thought they would know better and not repeat the mistakes of their seniors who have been doing these things all these years since taking power in 1994. But if it continues with this generation, it really makes us to be hopeless that there will ever be any renewal in the ANC and its government employees. Because really, you can't behave like this. These people, I mean, really, I was laughing. There's an excuse there that says the car is leaning to the right. What is this? You know, really, brother, they think people are stupid. It's unacceptable.
And you think Mercedes would say that? The car is leaning?
You know, to
well,
the right.
Well, perhaps.
They will actually tell you that the car has a problem with maybe the shocks or something,
you know,
like that.
Yeah, they can't say the car is leaning to the right when you're
like,
driving.
It's leaning.
You know, so it's unacceptable. I mean, and we are, as a country, we know that there's a whole lot of poverty, unemployment going on, the economy is sluggish. If anything, public officials ought to be tightening the belt in terms of how they spend. We can't buy you a car, Chief, which I also believe is we are spoiling our public officials. These people, we buy them cars, we buy them houses, we buy them everything. But on top of that, being spoiled like that, you still want to go and, you know, waste more of our money on unnecessary things. So, and the unfortunate thing is that there's not going to be consequence. That is the most unfortunate thing about this government. Yes, we're here talking about it. Zimasa exposed it. It made national headlines. It was discussed everywhere throughout Sunday. But consequence. What is going to happen? This guy is going to be an MEC going forward because there ought to be consequences like this so that others don't do it as well. If there is no consequence, it only ends with us debating it here. Mm. Others are going to do it and there will be a precedent that has been set that you never acted on so-and-so. Mm. Why are you acting on me? So it's really, you know, it's one of those annoying things, man, about this government.
I would really, 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 really like to hear the actual truth on why the guy didn't want to use the car. I understand there are rivals and whatnot, but it's just a car. If you think it's dead, take it to a car wash.
Well, the speculation that because there are rivals, the previous one might have bewitched it, that if this one drives it and then there are issues, even that...
Then it's going to lean to the right.
Even that silly excuse is not enough. I mean, because even if someone bewitched it, man, if you believe in those things, there's ways to cleanse a car. You know,
somehow that's why I think it's just an ego thing.
You know?
Hence, I don't understand why they never sold the car in the first place.
Exactly.
And bought a new car.
I think that the KZN cabinet, the premier, the Sihle Zikalala, should put his foot down.
He won't.
And make this guy pay back the money.
That's how the NC operates.
For the rental.
They are close. He won't.
We must tell him in this platform that, dear Sihle Zikalala, make this guy pay back a portion of the amount that he's been spent.
And discipline him.
Yeah, and
please.
Discipline him. We can't go on like this. I mean... It's silly excuses. I get it if the car was in an accident. Mm. You know, you get those stories where in my province there in the Eastern Cape, where an MEC decides to drive a car. They don't know how to drive or whatever. And then the car is in an accident. Mm. Now they have to, you know, hire a car. You get, it's a scandal. He did something wrong, but you can justify the fact that You are renting a car.
Yeah.
You were wrong for using the car and it's in an accident, but while it's being fixed, you are renting. Just because your predecessor was using a car.
It's silly.
No.
You know, when you guys talk about accountability, I did watch the MEC a bit on TV, but I also read a lot on social media, but specifically the statement that was released by the education department. You see, our public reps, what they do is, instead of being accountable, they will go on and say there is a conspiracy against me, my rivals, political rivals, this and that. How do you say that when on the story, on the third paragraph of, on the story, Mercedes-Benz, on the record, it's not off the record, on the record they are saying that we can confirm that the letter referred to was not authorized by Mercedes-Benz or any of its agents. That is fraud. Forging a letter is fraud. So
that's got nothing to do with political rivals.
It's got nothing. It's their decision there at the department to fool South Africans and lie and go as far as breaking the law and forging letters. So I don't understand how the guy is confidently on TV saying, no, we did nothing wrong and this and that.
But that seems to be the popular political narrative now, isn't it? The moment you're confronted with some sort of scandal or allegation, the first thing you start doing is blaming something else.
Hence I'm saying that's why they get off scot-free. That's why there will never be any accountability.
So you're blaming white monopoly capital, or you're blaming paid journalists, or you're blaming, in this case, you're blaming your political rivals. But where's the accountability?
It seems these guys, you can catch them wearing brown shoes and say, this guy is wearing brown shoes and say, there is a conspiracy against me because I never liked brown shoes.
Guys, there is someone at a department of education who decided that forgery was the best way to go about this. Forgery, I mean, that is huge. It's you're not lying about Zimasa, some nun, you know. You're lying about Mercedes-Benz. This is a huge brand. You are damaging their brand. It's an international brand. It's not just some smaller nyana car manufacturer from my village. How do you even get to a point where you lie that much?
And I get that the officials are the ones who are behind the forgery, but the MEC as well cannot be absolved from this, because surely he was participating in the whole thing. Had he just said, guys, tell them the truth and we apologize for what I did, they wouldn't have gone to those extends as someone, as a political figure who is responsible, as he claims to be in these interviews that he's been doing. He was supposed to say, guys, let's not spin this thing, let's not tell any lies, we've been caught, let's tell the truth and let's do the right thing going forward. And I think this thing would have been accepted better, would have reported that, yes, the MC, but the MC has admitted and has apologized and has said he will take full responsibility.
How do you take responsibility and then play victim at the same time?
No, that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying...
He
encouraged this kind of behavior of fraud, and also he too cannot be absorbed from this.
You see, you must take that example of Ntantanene. Ntantanene did not lie under oath. He told a story to Spamandla Gogge, and then he told the real story at the commission, and then he resigned after that. You know, we have to respect such example. So your brother Mshengu must learn from.
No, he must just be disciplined, he must resign.
You see, here's the thing.
He's young, guys.
He can resign and find himself there at legislature and do an introspection. Maybe 5 years from now, he will be redeployed.
No, but this is my problem. Zimoso, what you just said, he's young, it's fine. But the thing is, we've become so used to this that this is, for us, is a small scandal. It's just half a million rand.
It's actually very tiny compared to what we've seen.
Exactly. And the thing is, in this country, we're talking now about, Cyril Ramaphosa is speaking about renewal and all of that rubbish, and talking about tightening the belts of in the public sector, cutting the wages, all of that. So you're trying to sort of tighten government's belts, but at the same time, you've got this massive expose which shows how this is not working. So surely you should start holding people accountable, and to a higher standard of accountability. Rather than a disciplining, people should be axed for doing these things. If it was mistakenly, I could understand, but purposefully, were you actually forging letters? That's a whole different story, isn't it?
You know, there's a difference between misinterpreting the law.
Yeah.
And actively breaking it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see people have find some information and then you actively try to cover up.
But if you have state law advisors as well, if you were at your disposal all the time.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to say you misinterpreted the law.
What I'm saying is that we must take a stance in this podcast and say he must resign.
He must be disciplined. I think the premier must discipline him. It's up to the premier to see what form of sanction is enough for him. I mean, at least he's a first-time offender. But I'm not saying he shouldn't, you know, be given his matching papers. But he ought to be disciplined. If the Premier, Sitlhiso Galala, doesn't take any kind of action and disciplinary he measures against the guy, then we will know that his new dawn in KZN is sunset.
No.
I don't think Zigalala has ever claimed to have a new dawn in KZN. Please don't put word in his mouth.
But what I'm saying, if Sitlhiso Galala doesn't take action against this guy, if this guy doesn't resign on his own, the ANC here from National must take action against him. Because he must instill discipline there in that province. You can't claim to be in a renewal phase, saying that there were 9 wasted years, and then people continue to do the things that were being done in the era that you said was a chaos.
Yeah.
So how are you able to justify that
to
us?
But China, if they fire them, the reality must face, they will have to probably fire everyone. I mean, there's another
Eastern person
who was saying it will take 100 years to fix toilets in the education. You see, those people, all of them must be fired.
They must be dealt with.
You know, it's a mess.
Can I just say something? I'm very disappointed at the MEC. I'm less disappointed about the almost 500,000 that has been spent. But I'm more disappointed with him defending this thing, despite it being this obvious. I did not anticipate him going on a media tour defending this rubbish.
You know?
I did not expect the statement that they sent out. Amil, you must read it. It's very long.
What did it say? Just a gist of it.
Basically, it says there is a campaign to discredit him and, you know, young leaders, whatever the thing they are. And they are adding a whole lot of unrelated things, like he has forfeited, I think, a gardener or a maid that he's entitled to. But that's not what we're talking about. Here are the facts. These are the facts that I would have been okay with him saying, we will do an investigation, we'll get back to you. We don't have these facts. If he doesn't, I don't have these facts yet. We'll do an investigation, we'll get back to you. It's also okay to rubbish stories that appear in the paper. It's also okay. But to go as far as insinuating that there's a plot against you, no, that is very disappointing.
Okay, we're going to take a very quick short break. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about the DA's lead up to its federal council meeting this weekend. Join us when we're back.
Racial identity politics. A phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researcher Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Find Let's Start an Argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's get straight into it. The DA's Western Cape leader, Bonginkosi Madikizela, says he cannot be distracted from his mandate of running the party in the province by a race to become the interim federal leader. Now, Madikizela was speaking to Times Live earlier this week, where he said that there can't be any interruption to the current leadership of the party, and therefore he has withdrawn himself from the race for the interim federal leader of the party. Apiwe, what do you make of this decision from Madikizela here?
I'm not that surprised. He initially said that he was not going to make himself available. If you remember, there's a story that we had written some time back saying that he had been approached, but his priorities are the Western Cape and whatnot.
So why did he enter the race in the first place?
So I think it's a matter of the person that he wanted to enter the race, the person he thought was the ideal candidate for this period, he had not, I don't know, never agreed to take over and whatnot. So he decided.
Who was that? Who was that person? Any idea?
I have an idea. So and then he didn't. So he thought he must go at it himself. but maybe he's been advised otherwise. But he's not ruling out contesting
for the permanent position.
I don't know how that works for him. I don't know his thinking, because how he became the leader of the Western Cape is that he took over as interim leader for well, he was deputy to Patricia de Lille, so it made sense at that point. But people who supported him and people who were with him at the time said, look, if he doesn't challenge now, whoever is the interim leader is going to be interested to be the permanent leader.
Well, obviously,
and therefore,
that person would have
it gives you momentum.
Yeah, a more advantageous footing when they get into the elections next year in May. So, sort of a weird one there. So basically, the position for interim leader is being contested now by John Steenhuisen, who's the party's parliamentary leader, and then Makhashule Ghana, who's up here in Gauteng.
As an MPL. His official position in the DA is I think is the leader or chairperson of the MPL's network, which include members of the legislatures and members of the NCOP. He's the former leader of the he's a former youth leader of the DA. He also is what. Yeah, he's been in the FedEx before. Yeah.
So no, basically we've got
And he's also a Pirate supporter, so I'm guessing Fumfu is not.
I don't take him seriously.
The previous leader was a Kaizer Chiefs supporter, so hey.
Look, Amil, my take on Bongikosi, you know, I think I don't know. I don't want to be too rough, but he's full of jokes, man. You know, and I don't think anyone will take him seriously.
Just come from first. I don't want to be too rough, but
I don't think anyone will take him seriously when he throws his name in the head for the permanent position, having pulled this stunt. I think before, as a seasoned political leader, before you make any move, you think through it very, very, very carefully. You can't make such, you can't be that clumsy of making a decision. Barely a week later, you are reversing it. It means that you never thought about it in the first place. So such things, may compromise him in the future. Actually, I don't think he stands any chance if he happens to throw his name in the hat for the permanent position. So I think he was, quite careless there, and he has compromised himself going forward. That's just my take.
I actually forgot him. Like, in my mind, the people who are contesting Astinis and Ghana, I literally forgot about Madikizela. So maybe it's a good thing for him to just focus on the Western Cape. But I mean, like Mvumvu was saying, you can't just be playing back and forth.
Well, I'm sure he's had his reasons, right? But let's look forward to this weekend, Apiwe. You've got Ghana going up against John Steenhuisen. Let's analyze this a little bit, right? Is this sort of factional politics playing out again? Whose side do each of them fall to in terms of allegiances? What's happening within the party right now as we lead up to the weekend?
If you read the story we wrote about Ghana, there was an interview Steenhuisen had on the same day in a different radio station. You can see the thinking, it's sort of worlds apart in terms of how they want to achieve what they both think the DA should be. And the question of race, unfortunately, is top this time around. Ghana, in his letter to the delegates who are going to be voting this weekend, he in fact emphasized that in fact, as a party, we need to.
Yeah, he said there continues to be a brand of politics that strains to emphasize that race does not matter. And then he says, but still recognizes that in order to win elections, the DA has to have black leadership.
Yeah, I think he was speaking to the number of critics that have been saying that a DA is a white party that uses black people as just faces to win votes. I think that's what he's speaking to. He's saying, if you say that black leaders are needed, but then you continuously say you can't, you know, you don't have to acknowledge race, then, you know, it means you're just using them for votes. Whereas Danny Hazen on the other side strongly believes that you don't necessarily need to be black or a woman to be able to say in a platform that this is what we stand for. We stand for the upliftment of black people who have been previously disadvantaged. We stand for the dismantling of patriarchy, and therefore, yeah. So those are the two arguments. Let's see how.
So are we talking about a sort of someone aligned to sort of the Musi Maimani ideology versus somebody aligned to the Helen Ziller ideology?
Seemingly, that's how it is playing out now. But of course, John in his interview sort of said he differs with Helen Ziller, but he didn't break it down to where exactly does he differ. But when you listen to Helen Ziller and you listen to his arguments throughout, ever since Musi has resigned, you can see that his brand of politics, his thinking, his brand of liberalism is similarly, and it's very much aligned to Helen's thinking.
I mean, first of all, for me, this is a no contest as far as I'm concerned. John Steyn-Hazen is going to win it. We have analyzed before the direction which the new TA is taking. It's taking that the liberal brand of Helen Ziller's politics, and as Apiwe just correctly put it, Steyn-Hazen is in line with that kind of thinking. And Makashule, we know that part of the reason Musi had fallen out with the likes of Helen Ziller and others within the party was because of pursuing the same politics that we have to acknowledge the issues of historical disadvantages which affected mainly black people and women. And, you know, just to comment maybe on John Steyn-Hazen's, you know, quite opportunistic comments around women and black people, and the guy saying he can, you know, you don't have to have them, they can be represented by others. Seriously, I worry about his politics. I think the DA is going to suffer big time. I would never vote for a DA that believes in that kind of a situation, as you know, Steyn-Hazen is. But as I said before, I think the DA has come to terms with the fact that they represent a particular constituency, mainly white, and they are satisfied with that, and they don't want to take over government anytime soon, because they will never happen. As I say, I will never vote for them with the kind of politics that they are pushing now. I doubt many people would resonate with those things. As I say, when I said it's a no contest, Ghana with his kind of politics, with the DA going the other direction, he stands no chance. Actually, I feel for him. This guy just doesn't get enough of being, you know, clobbered. We know he wanted to be a premier, he was clobbered. Now he wants to be a party leader, and he's coming from the wrong direction. I think he should have just stood back.
but you can't have a John who is not contested in China. You are creating a problem there, a very big problem for the DA. But also the DA, for me, it's very strange that policy direction seems to be dictated by who is at the top at the time. Why are they not having a policy conference that is going to say this is the direction that we're taking? Because honestly, I'm uncomfortable with an official opposition in South Africa where policy will be decided by who wins this race between these two guys. So on 702, what stood out for me when Steyn-Hazen was speaking was that South Africans had become far too obsessed with race. Only he can say that.
Imagine.
You can never say that. You can't say that. He can say that because he's white. Yeah. But we black people, that's not how we feel. So, yeah, no, good luck. Good luck to both candidates
you
for
see,
the weekend.
You see, here's another one who's not going to vote for the
DA. Good luck to both candidates for the weekend. Good luck to the DA going forward. Yeah. Yeah, local government elections are around the corner. They must be careful.
Are you going to vote for the DA? Apparently, this one is not voting for the DA. This one is not voting.
Not one that is led by Steyn-Hazen.
I'm EFF supporter.
Guys. Oh, no!
Yay!
it is. Skeletons. We're hearing things in this podcast.
And this one is an ANC bot. This one.
Don't.
Oh, you DM. Yeah, no, you DM. Shame. Yeah, no. I misplaced.
No.
Yeah, no, you know yourself.
Look, I think it's a very interesting contest. It's a pity that it's for the interim leader. It would have been far more interesting if this contest would have been tested for quite some time. In the DA, there's been these clashing schools of thoughts, if I can call it that, for quite some time. So it would have been very interesting if Ghana, with his campaign and Steenhuisen, were going head to head at a conference where it's open to delegates, not just a few members of the federal council, because the arguments that both sides they are raising are valid to either side, that those that agree with Ghana, they do so passionately, and those that agree with Steenhuisen, they do so passionately.
Yeah.
If you had read that story we wrote when Steenhuisen became the chair, the leader of the opposition.
Caucus.
Yeah, the leader of the opposition.
In parliament.
In parliament. Mm. And the people who had been commenting about it, who had been talking about what they think about race, or what they think the party had gone, or how they thought the party had gone wrong, and so on. So it is important for them as the party to say, you know, once and for all, the majority of the people, of the members, they feel that going forward, this
race thing,
this is how you put it to bed. And somehow, I don't think they will put it to bed after this weekend. Somehow.
They won't. But yeah, even if it was for the main conference, man, we know members in these parties don't really matter that much. The reality that we must face is that issues that are discussed, even if people have police conference, are sponsored by people high up who've got ambitions. Members are just used, you know, by that particular person to push their agenda. Members barely have their independent contribution. It's the same with the ANC. We know how these things happen.
Look,
so it doesn't really matter anyway. It was going to be Steenhuisen's views and the views of the others.
Kumbumbu has given up on this thing.
Yeah, no, man.
It doesn't matter.
But look, I get what you're saying. Political parties, in the main, sorry, sometimes politicians get to decide based on not just what they believe in, but also the future prospects, both for the party and for themselves. Those are factors that play. But you see, when you go to a conference, they call it a watershed moment, whatever, and someone emerges, regardless of whether you had agreed or disagreed, going forward, when that leader speaks, it then gives them much more power than when someone went and didn't get contested, because you understand the strength that they have. Whether because of their ideologies or because of how they managed to mobilize. But still, you respect it because it holds that much weight. So what I think was their main problem now, the DA, it's not just the loss with elections. These people were fighting even before the elections, because when you went to their last conference, Musima Imani was not being challenged. So no one, John was not standing against him. There was no one standing against Maimane.
That's cowardice.
As a,
that's why I admire God.
As a person, head to head.
He's
so if Steenhuisen emerges, he will emerge very much more powerful than, I'm saying if it were a conference, he would have emerged very much more powerful than Musi had ever been. And if Ghana would have emerged at the conference, he could have been much more powerful, because you tested your ideas and then you tested your strength, your popularity, and you can see that before you stand up in a meeting and contest the view of someone who's standing there, because you must understand the history of how Musi got into power. to this day, some people felt that they were not contesting Musi. Musi was not contested. They were contesting Helen.
Yeah.
Helen Zille.
Yeah.
And now, when it came to a second term, he still didn't get contested. So he never got had to. Okay, Wilmot James might feel differently that he contested Musi head on, but I seriously don't believe it. He was contesting against Helen Zille, and he was going to lose.
Oksala, it's a rounded up
problem. Yeah, no. Well, Chief, and my closing remarks are very simple. I can stand here today and say congratulations in advance to John Steyn-Huisen, the new interim leader of the DA. And good luck to the DA with its proven failure of neoliberal agenda. Thank you.
Oh, okay, I think we're going to leave it there this week before this turns into a massive debate.
Mvumvu is being sangomatic.
1,000, let's go.
We'll tell you how that goes next week. But anyway, it's going to be DA, the DA's John Steyn-Huisen versus Makhushule Ghana this weekend at Federal Council. Next week, when we're back here, we can analyze the overall winner of that. And
John Steyn-Huisen.
Join us then.